All right, my name is JP. I'm an alcoholic.
We love you, JP.
Lots and lots and lots. Oh, budget.
Thank you. Welcome to Wacky Paw 15 in Las Vegas. Wacky Paw is a Western Area Conference of Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous. Please help me to open this meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The topic of this panel meeting is how to get it on in AA. And I've now asked Courtney to read a passage from AA literature.
So this is some outside literature. I'm just kidding. How to get it on. All right. I'm Courtney. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Courtney. We love you, Courtney. Lots and lots and lots. Oh,
all right. I'm reading from Chapter 2, There's a Solution. We of Alcoholics Anonymous know thousands of men and women who were once just as hopeless as Bill. Nearly all have recovered. They have solved the drink problem. We are average Americans. All sections of this country and many of its occupations are represented, as well as many political, economic, social, and religious backgrounds. We are people who normally would not mix, but there exists among us a fellowship, a friendliness, and an understanding which is indescribably wonderful. We are like the passengers of a great liner the moment after rescue from shipwreck, when camaraderie, joyousness, and democracy pervade the vessel from steerage to captain's table. Unlike the feelings of the ship's passengers, however, our joy and escape from disaster does not subside as we go in our individual ways. The feeling of having shared in a common peril is one element in the powerful cement which binds us, but that in itself would never have held us together as we are now joined. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. Thank you.
All right. We just go right into introducing speakers. So I'm going to introduce our first speaker, who is now a good friend of mine, stays in my home, and love him to death, Eddie P. from Tucson.
My name's Eddie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Eddie. We love you, Eddie. Lots and lots and lots.
I love most of you, too. Yeah, I guess this is probably going to be one of those from the heart things because I was going to, like, prepare a lot more. I was going to do, like, 2 hours of, like, writing before this and meditate. And I'm dead serious because I wanted to come here rehearsed and hear you guys. And so you guys can hear, like, a real polished version of, like, the traditions. And I ran out of time as we were going to the panels. And next thing I know, I'm, like, panicking trying to get here in time. So here I am. My sobriety date is July 17 of 1998. My home group is the Free Spirit Group. We meet Wednesday night at 6 p.m. It's on the Native American soil, the Yaqui Reservation. And just like the home group I just left after quite a few years, once again, the reason that's my home group, there's not a newcomer that walks in that room without the hand of AA being extended to them. You know, and I think that's a good way to even segue into the traditions. You know, what the speaker last night said with the people that are on this panel and actually chairing the panels, man, you know, they're in the trenches. You know, and when I think about, like, my journey in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, JP said something last night. You know, he said, we're not potential alcoholics or the future of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're Alcoholics Anonymous now, you know, because we're GSRs. We're active. We're reaching out to the newcomers. You know, the future of Alcoholics Anonymous, which a friend and I were talking about yesterday, are the people that's still out there, you know, that haven't found Alcoholics Anonymous yet. The ones that are dying or doesn't know there's a solution or a way out of this thing. You know, and what I love about young people, especially the young people that I'm introduced to, is that they understand that they have a primary purpose. You know, they understand that there's people dying by the wayside. You know, they understand that this is a gift, you know, and they understand that the only way they keep this gift is if they insist upon giving away the entire product. This last Flagstaff Roundup, there was a speaker that says, you don't have to give it away to keep it, you got to give it away to get it. You know, and I love that phrase, man, because if you ain't giving it away, you ain't got it. You know, and if you're new and coming into these rooms, you know, keep coming back because there's a common solution in here. You know, if we got some time in the room, you know, why am I really in this room today? You know, why is it that I show up to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings? You know, I haven't thought about drinking for a long time, you know, and I'm extremely blessed with that. So when I think about that, you know, and I'm coming in and I got this 12-step experience, I'm spiritually awakened, you know, I no longer fight the desire if I'm going to drink or not drink today. You know, I kind of have a deeper respect and admiration for Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and it says that once this 12-step work forms an AA group, you know, realizing that this is a life and death errand, realizing that I had this immense amount of gratitude for the life I had today. You know, the way my sponsor phrased it when I first came in is the most selfish thing I can do today is not give it back to the next man who's fighting for his life. You know, so how does that look like for me? How do I preserve this thing? And kind of scattered because, like I said, I'm not really that polished. But we're listening to a speaker CD on the way up here because I find that fun. And and we're talking about, you know, and the guy was talking about the Washingtonians. And I love this phrase because even before Alcoholics Anonymous, there were people doing what Alcoholics Anonymous does today. I mean, these people were out there, reached 12-stepping other people. They had real similar steps. They actually grew exponentially faster than AA today. You know, if you compare it to the population that it was today back then, I mean, they were doing better work than AA is doing today. You know, but somehow these people failed as a society. You know, somehow that even though these people were touching lives in the masses, they weren't able to stay together, you know. And for me, it's kind of like one of those things that, you know, I'm so grateful for this thing, but how do we stay together? You know, and that's what the traditions to me are really all about. You know, if I'm here today by the grace of God, you know, but I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for another man reaching out his hand, giving me that time that I needed, take me through this process that ultimately introduces me to a God. And so I know for me, I can't stay sober on my own accord. You know, if I could stay sober on my own accord, trust me, I wouldn't be here. You know, the big book tells me I'm powerless. You know, that means I've lost the power of choice. You know, jails, prisons, losing jobs, losing her, whatever the consequences is, no amount of reason, no amount of consequence, no amount of anything is going to keep me sober. And the only thing that I know that's worked in my life is somebody else taking the time. So what that's saying is that I need you. You know, saying that left alone, I'll die. You know, I die alone. So the traditions take on a different meaning, not just for the respect that I have for the 12 steps, but knowing that if I don't preserve this thing, like I was saying, the future of Alcoholics Anonymous are the people that's still out there, how am I preserving it for those guys that are coming in through the doors? You know, because it's like the speaker was talking about last night, it's beyond, initially it was about me 12-stepping other guys so I can be the good AA, look at all these newcomers I'm working with. Yeah, I'm making the approach on the new man. Yeah, I'm 12-stepping other people because my sponsor's writing me. How many newcomers have I met this week? You know, and I'm kind of like trying to get a good report card. You know, but eventually it really does come down to that complete altruism. You know, like it talks about an emotional sobriety, the type of giving that asks no reward. You know, and that's the only place I ever get that kind of giving. That's the only time I really feel that connection with God. That's the only time I give without any expectation with anything in return. You know, it's not at work. You know, at work I have expectations attached to everything. Relationships, once again, how dare you fail to recognize my truly exceptional abilities. You know. But one drunk working with another for me is a time, you know, where I really feel God and I really, like I said, give without any ask of reward. And eventually this forms a group. And, you know, and whether I like you or not, I need you to stay sober. You know, and you know what the first tradition talks about walking into, you know, is that just talking about this common welfare. And the reason I respect this is through a spiritual awakening. I think coming into AA, the traditions mean nothing to me. You know, I just don't know if I'm going to get drunk today. You know, I don't know if I really want this thing. I don't know really know if I'm an alcoholic because nobody's really qualified me yet. You know, I'm in the back of the room. I'm here on a court card or whatever reason I'm here, treatment ad infinitum. And then someone carries this message. So initially, traditions mean absolutely nothing to me. But today, like I said, it's a life and death errand, and I have a deep respect and admiration for Alcoholics Anonymous. So for me, I feel this sense of duty to make sure that the traditions remain intact, or else, like the Washingtonians, AA, as I know it today, would cease to exist. You know, and in the long term, I guess I would cease to exist, because like I said, if it's just me and God, I'll get drunk. You know, I need you. The problem is I don't like you, at least not a lot of you. So, and the traditions teach me so I can play well with others. You know, actually the ninth step teaches me to have a new foundation to which have new relationships based upon. But the traditions tell me how I interact with you as a whole. You know, and I like some of the things, like even on tradition one where it talks about, you know, the common welfare. You know, I'm not always about the common welfare. I love the traditions checklist. You know, one of the questions in there, you know, in AA, am I producer of unity? Or in essence, it's asking if I talk crap about other members. Right? Am I divisive or am I all-inclusive? Do I say that one kind of AA doesn't do it right and compare one area with another? I don't know about y'all, but I'm pretty judgmental. You know, and if I don't like you and somebody else gives me a little bit of fuel, you know, my ears perk up, you know, and I want to give more ammunition to that, right? Like, yeah, I don't like them either. Or, yeah, that group sucks. Or, yeah, this area doesn't carry the message right. You know, and so for me, am I... Is that really about the common welfare? You know, or is that more of an ego feeding proposition that say I know better than you? Or in essence saying that I know better than God. You know, which immediately kind of precipitates us into tradition two. You know, talking about basically there's one ultimate authority. You know, that's saying if we have all these recovered people that allegedly have tapped into this new power, that a group of us collectively will come up with any decision I can come with individually. You know, for me, that's kind of hard, you know, because I got a lot of really good ideas. You know, like JP was talking about yesterday, man, is we were in the car for like 3 hours and we solved all of AA's problems. You know, I really did. And, you know, and I'm thinking about my own struggles with this principle. You know, if the group says something, you know, and I disagree with it, that's it. You know, if the group already spoke its will. You know, the problem with me is that I want to revisit that issue. You know, I want to convince my army of disciples, sponsees, whatever, align those pawns. You know, let's revisit this after I re-inform you what I was really trying to say. And let's maybe have a new vote on this. But, you know, ultimately what it's saying is that if I'm part of a group, I have pretty much two rights. I have a right to go with what the group decides, but I have no right to cause disharmony within that group. My job at that point is probably to either A, find a new home group, or B, just trust the process and get the lesson I need to get in it. You know, I don't always do that like eloquently. You know, like I said, I got this huge inflated ego. You know, and that's what I love about the steps, because the steps really keep me right size. You know, like my sponsor used to tell me, just count yourself, you're not so many. You know, and you know, that really hurts my feelings, right? Because, you know, I really think of myself as being more important than what I am. But the reality, man, I'm just another drunk trying to stay sober, and, you know, and like I said, I'm not prepared at all, so hopefully this comes out the way it's supposed to. You know, in other ways, in the second tradition on the checklist is this question that says, do I embrace all of AA, only embrace the parts that I like or choose? Right. And I have a lot of experiences with the parts I like and choose. You know, initially when I first got sober, I was a year sober before I got introduced into YPAW. You know, and I wanted nothing to do with these things because you guys are crazy. You guys weren't talking out of the book the way I was taught. You guys weren't doing meetings correctly. You guys are chanting. You guys are doing things that I didn't think was ethical within the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I go to my first meeting at a year sober, man, and I don't want any part to do with you. You know, this is more along the lines of the fifth tradition, but my sponsor asked me at that time, you know, he goes, Eddie, I understand, but do you think you could possibly be effective with other young people? Because I was 21 at the time. And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, well, Ed, what's your singleness of purpose? You know, what's your primary purpose? You know, and when he called me out on that, you know, and he called me out on my 12-step, Do I think I could be effective with another young man coming into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that needs to know what it's like to be a young man in recovery? And when I brought that to my meditation that night, unfortunately, the answer was yes. And since then, this is my last year in YPAW. But it's like, but what happens is that, you know, two or more alcoholics gather together, you know, may call themselves an AA group. But ultimately, what's happened throughout my trials and tribulation in sobriety, the group has afforded me opportunities to get new experiences that I would not have picked for myself. You know, about 3 years ago, Tacky Paul voted for me to be the native liaison. I'm not even native. You know what I mean? It's not ultimately like for an ego-feeding proposition. I want to be like events chair, right? Or program, because like a friend of mine said the other day, you know, I kind of want to be the DJ of Alcoholics Anonymous and kind of arrange the ballet and the lights. And, you know, that's prestigious, right? And a good friend of mine said the other day at a meeting, I'm going to steal it and call it my own, is he says, you know, God doesn't call upon the qualified, he qualified those called upon. You know, and ultimately the group decided what they think I would best serve the group as. You know, I don't get to dictate that role. You know, AA has taught me to suit up and show up and play the role that you assign. You know, I don't get to dictate that role all the time. You know, since that journey, like something I thought I was embarking upon, kind of I'll fulfill my commitment because that's what my sponsors taught me to do, whether or not it's something I wanted to do. But since then, some relationships have been formed, and I don't know if you guys were sticking around for the biscuit earlier today, but through that 12-step work or through that opportunity to serve the group, you know, some amazing relationships have happened. You know, and here's me coming into this thing. Even when I first went down there, my ego's like, I'm going to carry this message to people that have recovered without me, right? But I'm going to carry this message to this group of people. And the reality was, man, is just Alcoholics Anonymous is alive and well in the Native community. You know, one drunk working with another with the singleness of purpose, their only desire to be helpful for the next man coming in so they can say, hey, we have a solution of the way you're, way out of the way you're feeling. You know, grab my hand and we'll show you how to do this thing. You know, and I come into their group and I get to experience AA working in another community. You know, and since then, I don't know if you guys know, but Tucson is bidding with a Native American committee to bring Wacky Paul, hopefully next year or whatever year, to Native soil for the first time. You know, left to my own accord, left to my own device, I would that's not the position I want to play. It really isn't. You know, but a group ultimately decides better than what I could ever decide for myself. You know, and even for this next role coming up, if we get it, or for new elections or whatever, once again, my ego has this great idea of what I want Tacky Paul to vote me in as. But my job is to just make myself available. And I think the group's going to say where they think I'll best suit them. You know? And this year, I'm treasurer. I hate treasurer. But like that question in the second step, do I embrace all of it or just the parts I like and understand? You know, so this year, I'm the best treasurer that I can be. You know, I treat Tacky Paul's money better than I treat my own money. You know, and I'm grateful for that opportunity. You know, the third tradition for me, and I got to see how much time I have. I'm running out. See, I'm only on tradition 3, so thank God you guys didn't give me a full hour. I'm going to just pose a couple questions, and then I'll wrap it up real quick. Because I like controversy. My sponsor says always bring enough for the newcomer, and always bring enough for the guy with time to feel uncomfortable. You know, and if anything, I hope it just kind of gets you guys more involved in the process. You know, and for me, you know, when I think about tradition 3 and 5, you know, tradition 5 in its long form says that, you know, AA is like a complete entity, which means complete within itself. And the good thing about YPAW, it's all inclusive. And these are some things that I was taught, like coming in, like, you know, like, is all men's meeting all inclusive or complete within itself? Is an old timer meeting with X amount of time all inclusive? You know, because if a woman comes into a man's meeting, does she have the same opportunity to get sober if she has a desire to drink? You know, and I don't really have an opinion. You know what I mean? But I do know that the traditions trigger a lot of questions and really make me look at myself and really make me look on how I'm performing with AA as a whole. And once again, really allows me to, like, find my place in Alcoholics Anonymous in a role that you guys dictate. I really didn't even think it was 15 minutes already, but conform to the group conscience of the tradition too and shut up. But I love Wacky Paw. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm eternally grateful for the gifts that it has afforded me, And thank you for an opportunity. And hopefully I said something that was valuable.
All right, next we have a speaker who I actually don't know personally, but she did come and speak at our Freaky Paw New Year's rave, and it was fantastic. So next is Camille from Tucson also.
Hi, I'm Camille. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you. I love you, too. My sobriety date is September 17th of 2005. My home group in Tucson is Late Nighters. It's a fantastic meeting. We actually have a tradition study on the third Saturday of the month, and I think it's the latest late-night tradition study in Tucson, for sure. You know, so I'm here kind of to talk to you with a focus on traditions and romantic relationships, And I feel so unqualified. we'll see how it goes. I've been in my relationship with my husband for 3.5 years. We were just married in October. It was amazing. Up to that point, my longest relationship had been about 6 months. And all of my exes, you know, it wasn't like we just broke up. They would move out of the country, you know, and... One became a priest and sequestered himself in a Christian compound, and the other one, you know, like moved to Peru to become a shaman or something like that. And I like to joke that like I inspired those sort of like spiritual experiences in them, you know? But I think I was just really difficult to deal with. So when I first came in here, you know, I was the good little AA. I tried so hard. And so when my sponsor said, don't be in a relationship for a year, I was like, okay, I'll make it a year and a half. You know, and it wasn't like it was for lack of trying. You know, like I was just in a place where there wasn't a lot of opportunity. Towards the end of that year and a half, you know, the only thing I came out of there with was, you know, just... sobriety, of course, and like a better understanding of myself, but I was no better equipped to be in a relationship than I had been when I walked in the rooms. You know, I need to practice this thing. And so the traditions have come in handy. And what I've noticed is that I was looking over the stuff I actually did prepare, Eddie. And... And what I found is that, you know, like if I'm working the steps of the program and I'm in a relationship with someone, I'm going to find that I'm pretty much working a lot of the traditions in my relationship without ever having intended to, without ever knowing it, you know. And so when it comes to principles of rigorous honesty or just having integrity and grace, you know, that translates really well from the steps, you know. But this stuff kind of focuses me a little bit more. And I wanted to start with tradition 7. I'm going to read them just because when I came in, I had no idea what they were. So tradition 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. And within a relationship, if I'm not being spiritually, emotionally, and physically self-supporting, the rest of these traditions mean nothing. You know, I cannot accomplish those in my best of days, you know. So for me, it's absolutely essential, you know, that I have a relationship with God before endeavoring to find a relationship with another human being. And how I found that was first by having a relationship with a sponsor, you know, understanding and receiving unconditional love. And then through that, I could start to believe that God loved me in that way, you know. And then once I had that kind of under my belt, I could start to look to you guys, you know, to start to love you unconditionally. Really, I mean... Both at a group level and at a relationship level, I don't understand these traditions until I'm breaking them, you know. So to share with you, you know, how I've not been self-supporting, my husband and I spent 3 months down in Rio, down in Brazil, and it was an amazing trip. You know, my husband trains jiu-jitsu, so we were going down there to, you know, get some training in, and I'm a type A personality, you know, like I had our visas like 9 months ahead of time. Half of our suitcases were filled with like a first aid kit, you know, and like water purification systems. You know, we were staying in the city, so it's like totally unnecessary. But we get there and To sum it up, Aaron and I are opposites. You know, he is laid back. He is jovial. He goes with the flow. I have a desperate need to control everything. You know, so we're landing in the airport in Rio, and I look out the window, and it looks like pre-Cold War Berlin. It looks like I'm in Azerbaijan. I've landed in hell, and it's like there's no palm trees swaying in the wind. You know, all my ideas about it, and it's gray. And I look out the window, and he's so excited. You know, and he's like poking at me, and already I'm freaked out because I can't speak Portuguese. You know, and so he's doing all these things, and he leans in to kiss me so affectionately, and I bite him. Like I can't communicate to him that I'm disturbed, you know? That's the best I can do, you know? And so the walk through customs was a little uncomfortable, you know? He's bleeding and I'm just like, and I always, after I do these things that I feel like are beyond my control, you know, I just feel so remorseful. It's like going through a spree, you know, in a relationship. And, you know, with a firm resolution not to do it again. I have bit him since then, you know? So, it's awesome. So, for me, when I look at how I'm doing this effectively, there's a question in the checklist, Eddie referred to it, it's how important in my recovery is the feeling of self-respect rather than the feeling of being always under obligation for charity received? I have these brief moments when I feel, and it's usually when, you know, I'm away from all of you, and I'm in maybe a city I don't know, or in a circumstance that's new to me, and I'm walking on my own, and I feel, and it's hard for me to describe, but I feel absolute autonomy and absolute independence with God, with the understanding that if all of you went away, if all the people I love, all the people in my life were gone, I would be okay with God. That's the tradition working in my life. You know, and so if I can hold on to that feeling, which I'm not saying I'm good at, if I can hold on to it and bring it into my interactions with Aaron, then we have a much better chance of success. You know, when I don't get serial monogamists. If you're in the room, I don't understand you. I'm a solitary person. I drank in a closet, you know, and so for someone to go from relationship to relationship, I don't get it, you know. So for me, being in a relationship has been the hardest thing I've had to do in my recovery. It's not just like going to an AA meeting and having to be of service. You know, it's not just thinking of an alcoholic when they call me on the phone. When I'm living with another alcoholic or if I'm living with another person just in general, I'm having to practice selflessness on a regular basis. You know, like brushing my teeth and moving over so he can spit. You know, stuff like that, which I don't want to do that. You know, I want to spit first, and that's how my mind works. On a small level, I'm constantly checks and balances. You know, so in our wedding vows, I told him you are my home, and that was a really meaningful statement for me because when I think of a home, I think of a spiritual structure. But when I'm thinking about Tradition 7, the foundation must be God. I have to have independence in that. I'm going to skip to Tradition 1. You know, Eddie touched on it very well. It says, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. And this was hard for me to get. But my relationship is not about me. I really thought it was. I thought I was the protagonist in a very quirky romantic comedy, you know, where there's dark, you know, a little bit of darkness and a little bit of, you know, joviality. But, like, I thought I was the star. And I'm not. You know, I'm not. The relationship is the star, you know? Like, the kind of example we can set for other, you know, we have a lot of younger people in our lives. What example can we set? And part of that, you know, I don't go around speaking badly of my husband. We fight, don't get me wrong, you know, but I'm not going to members of my community and speaking ill of him, you know, just because the preservation of the unity of our relationship, the fact that he can trust me in our community, that he can go into a meeting and he can look at my sponsees and know that they're not going to think any more poorly of him because of what I've said. That's important. You know, that's really important. So there was the death of the fairy tale in my life. And you know, I never liked Disney. But there was still that appeal that, like, you know, that this man was going to come out of, you know, the ether or whatever. And before it was like the smoky bar room. He was going to emerge from it, and he was, you know, going to treat me like the princess that I always was, and, you know, and respect me and all that great stuff. But, you know, like once when I was in Alcoholics Anonymous, and my thoughts started to shift to, you know, this isn't about me. My recovery isn't about me. What you think of me is none of my business. You know, and what I think of you, my life absolutely depends upon that. And so if I can bring that idea into my relationship, we have a lot of success in that sense. We had the experience, you know, and I share this. It might not be everyone's experience, but I share it just because it was an interesting thing that we went through. You know, before we got married, we entered into a prenuptial agreement, and awkward. You know, it's an awkward process, and especially when it's like down to the wire, where we're writing vows and then we're coming to an agreement upon, like, you know, like what happens when we divorce at the same time. You know, so it's like my brain was being pulled in a lot of different directions, and you know, like there have been times where I thought, you know, we were super super solid, but something like this where our instincts are in collision, where securities are threatened. And both of us, you know, had a lot of fear around it. And what was fantastic about that experience was that, and it was kind of like this, lawyers are strange people. I love anyone who's a lawyer, but it was difficult in the sense that they were saying, well, you have to demand this and you have to demand this. And so it was like all of a sudden we were picking sides, and we're not even married yet. You know, it's like, it's not even the divorce proceedings, but, what we had to do was to like resettle, say a prayer, come back together with this idea of like, what can we do with this understanding that we value our love for each other so much that even upon the dissolution of our marriage, can we have enough respect for the moment that we spent together to continue to support each other? That's tough. It's really tough. You know, there's a book, it's an Al-Anon book, I love it. It's called The Dilemma of the Alcoholic Marriage, and that's, it's been essential for me. I don't think my husband's read it. He's shaking his head. Nope. But, you know, it's teaching me how to communicate. You know, it's teaching me that when we're having a disagreement, I only bring up what we're having a disagreement about, not the, like, 2 years ago stuff that I've been storing up as ammunition. You know, like the way my brain works is honestly, it's he doesn't make the bed. A normal person might say he doesn't make the bed, he was busy, whatever. My brain tells me he doesn't make the bed, he doesn't love me, you know? And what I have to do, hopefully you're laughing because you understand. What I have to do is first I have to ask myself, is it true? With any of those crazy thoughts, I have to ask myself, is it true? And then, you know, after I'm usually like, no, it's not true. He loves me. You know, I turn it around and say, like, I don't take out the trash. I don't check the mail. I have a fear of mail. I always had paranoia about the postal service. But, you know, if I don't check the mail, does that mean I don't love him? You know? And sometimes those processes of thinking through things, which under normal circumstances, my alcoholism is too strong for that. Under a lot of circumstances of my relationship, I can think through things like that with God's help, you know, with some clarity and with the help of a sponsor. And then I'll skip to tradition 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. I guess I'll close with a story having to do with this tradition. It's a story I love. You know, this couple is pregnant. They already have one son, and it's a little toddler boy, and he's so excited for his little brother to come, you know, so excited. And he would talk to the mom's belly and, you know, and talk to his mom and say, you know, when he gets there, I really want to talk to him. I really want to have a conversation with my little brother. And the mom's like, sure, whatever, do it. And once the child finally comes and they bring him home, the little brother says, you know, I really want to have a conversation with my brother. And they're a little freaked out by this point because he's getting a little obsessive. And so they're like, okay, we'll let you have a conversation. He's like, I want to have a conversation alone. And they're like, okay, we'll just hide the pillows because don't smother him. So they let him have the conversation, but they crack the door and they overhear the big brother saying to the little brother, quick, remind me of what God's like. I'm beginning to forget. And that's the relationship I have with my husband. You know, he reminds me of what God's like through the good and the bad. you know. When I'm pushed, I have rage issues. I will be the first to tell you it's something I've struggled with for a long time. And every time, and it's most often directed at him. Sometimes it's towards some of his friends. But, but every time when I have that feeling of being disconnected from God, I'm able, if I'm coming to him as the 12th tradition suggests, on an equal footing, you know, equal in the eyes of God, God's kids, I can look in his eyes and I can see God reflected. And that's a pretty big thing for me, you know, because I believe my partnership with him and my partnership with all of you, really, but my partnership with him first and foremost is an attempt to get closer to God. And if that's something you're seeking, I wish all of you the same opportunity. It's been an absolute blessing in my life, and it's absolutely pushed me to grow and to change. And I hope that we get to grow and change together for a long time. So thank you.
Thank you, Camille. Real quick, before I introduce the next speaker, and because I'm at the microphone right now, I just wanted to say that for me, really what I want to do is I want to recognize somebody in here. I know it's going to embarrass the shit out of him, and I apologize. But my dad flew up here today with us to celebrate his 24th AA anniversary. Will you please stand up? All right, our next speaker and our final speaker is Andrew M. from Denver, Colorado.
Good afternoon, family. My name's Andrew. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, I love you too. It's good to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, clean and sober, with my family here. Welcome to everybody. Thank you to the host committee for inviting Freaky Paw to host this panel. We love sharing it with our friends from Tacky Paw. Let's give another round of applause real quick for Camille and Eddie, please. They're just some of my favorite people, and so it was a really cool opportunity to be able to share this with you guys and to have each of our unique experiences and to share with you how to get it on an AA. So biting is okay, as long as you're willing to analyze what's been going on with you and make amends appropriately. And that's all I got. No. I actually prepared a little bit, too, and then I was in the hot tub a little bit ago, and I was going through my notes, and the water from the jet, like, splashed up on all my notes. So, obviously, that was supposed to happen. I'll do the best that I can. The traditions, to me, are what transformed my recovery to another level. I had done the steps, and the steps, what they were a journey to receiving the gift. And the gift is the power to help others. Because the power that I lacked, that power that I didn't have that was sufficient enough to recover from alcoholism, is given to us through the process of working the steps in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It says that. It says, why shouldn't we laugh? We've been given the power to help others. And that's the power that keeps me free from the obsession of the mind. That is the power that separates me from my continued drinking and suffering. And that was what prepared me to continue to move forward, but I plateaued and I had this experience of having finished the steps and not knowing where to go from there. And what I've learned is that the steps are that journey to receiving the gift, and the traditions are my way of interpreting and understanding that gift and really learning how to apply it. And so really this was a trick. The how to get it on an AA is really just a way to get you to come in here so we can present the traditions to you. I encourage you, the traditions are not meant to be read for knowledge so that you can then use them with your AA ticket book and go write traditions violations, though I really wanted to do that for a period of time. I thought, that's a really great marketable tool. I should just make, you know, some little ticket books, you know, say Rule 62 on the top and just go around and write people tickets for, you know, traditions infractions. That's not really what it's about. What these traditions are about is they're spiritual in nature. These are principles that are meant to guide our process, just as the steps are and just as the 12 concepts are. There are 36 principles in Alcoholics Anonymous. So we're going to talk a little bit about these, but we have to start by talking about why it is that we come here. And that reading that we opened with, from There Is a Solution, we are people who normally would not mix, but there exists among us a fellowship, a friendliness, and an understanding which is indescribably wonderful. We're like the passengers of a great liner the moment after rescue from shipwreck, when camaraderie, joyousness, and democracy pervade the vessel from steerage to captain's table. Unlike the feelings of the ship's passengers, however, our joy in escape from disaster does not subside as we go our individual ways. The feeling of having shared in a common peril is one element in the powerful cement which binds us, but that in itself could never have held us together as we are now joined today. And it tells us the way that we are then joined. It says we have a common solution that we can absolutely agree upon. So in the first tradition, when we talk about unity, we're talking about the need for us to do the steps and do the work. If I don't do the steps, then I don't have anything to bring to the table. If you don't create an event, if you read carefully those facts, aims, and purposes of Wacky Paw, they say strengthen the unity within our region, not create it. Because we don't create unity by having an event. What we do at these events is we create and cultivate an atmosphere for 12-step work to become possible. And that's the stuff we've heard from awesome speakers all weekend. Is incredible 12-step work happening worldwide through these movements of young people of Alcoholics Anonymous with these conferences like this at the forefront of it. And so our job then as recovered members of Alcoholics Anonymous at these is to watch for that new person who comes into the room and carry that message of love and service to them. Let them know that there is a way out. Extend our hand to them. Offer them unconditional love and acceptance, not our judgment and our fear and our shit that we want to bring to everything else we do. And the only way I know how to leave that stuff at the door is through doing the steps. I don't know about you. I'm a pretty judgmental and resentful person like Eddie was talking about. And of my own devices, I want to sit in the corner of the room and I want to figure out how you guys are doing it wrong. Because when I can figure out what you're doing wrong, I can then talk about how to fix it, and then I get to look real special. And I discovered that in the steps, is I have this human condition where I am obsessed with wanting to look good, wanting to feel emotionally and financially secure in relationships. These are the things, these are my human instincts that in collision with others cause spiritual, emotional, mental, financial, or physical harm. Right? And so through my desires for sex, security, and society, basically I wake up every morning and I want to get laid and I'm hungry and I want you to tell me I'm special. But my alcoholism tells me that I'm not good enough to get enough of those things. And so in my clamor for these desires, I have to cut corners. I have to be dishonest. I'm manipulative. I have to use fear to control a room, right? Or I can be modest and self-sacrificing, right? But it's always about getting what I want. It's always about filling those human desires. But see, there's another part of the human condition, and that part is the search for spirituality that gets lost behind my human condition. And these traditions show me how, as we walk through this process, we see these principles and these ideals that we look for, and they show us where I get diverted by myself. So if the first tradition is about me working the steps so I can bring something to the table, my job in my group or in my relationship is to support your journey. That's my job. Support your journey. Do my best to help you along the way. Not tell you this is how you have to do it. Not judge you for the way you're doing it wrong. But just support your fucking journey, you know, and love you along the way. And worry about what I'm doing. Clear up my side of the street and show up. And the second tradition talks about for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself through our group conscience. And I want to stress the may. Because I don't know if you've sat in a business meeting before. But every once in a while you sit in a business meeting and it's real hard to hear God coming through the voices of those angry, egocentric, fear-based alcoholics. Which is what makes it a really cool part about being like a chair of a committee, you know, which JP has done an excellent job as a chair of Freaky Paw for the last year. He's just been a wonderful, wonderful part of my recovery and my life. But being able to sit as a chair of a committee, it's your job to listen beyond the fear, beyond the judgment. Where is the loving God and what's going on here? And it's like being a part of Wacky Paw was the first time I heard when we put together a big committee about a prayer chair. They were like, you have someone assigned to your committee for the specific purpose of stopping and saying, let's invite God back into this process. Let's take a deep breath, say a prayer, and get back to the loving purpose that we're all here for. Right? Because that loving God is, it will express itself through the conscience, like in a partnership, in a relationship. Me and that partner, we both have our own lives, our individual lives, our process, our thoughts, our way of being. Underneath that all, we have the same human condition, which always stems down to the same fears. And through that stuff, we have to be sure that when we hear that stuff, we hear the fear, that we respect and understand what that is. Not judge them for it, not tell them that this is your fear talking, you know, so let's just whatever. I mean, you have to find a way to communicate around that stuff. What's important is that when I'm taking care of myself and I'm in that partnership, I'm able to then seek that conscience of both of us. We share our opinions, you know, talk about everything. What do you have to lose? I'm not good at that. I don't know about you guys, but in my relationships, there's like, you know, I want to keep all this stuff over here in the corner, all these little dark secrets about myself. But the 10th step is what really taught me about learning how to get that stuff out, and it started with my sponsor and with a few close friends. But what's amazing now is that I'm in a relationship where I'm able to talk about everything. I mean, coming into the relationship, it was like, here's all the mistakes that I've made in my past relationships. Here's why. Here's the way I thought about all that stuff. This is who I am. It's not the kind of person I want to be anymore. These are some of the things that I'm trying to do now and do differently. This is the man that I want to be. This is my heart. This is my spirit. This is me, and I meant it all. And from that, we've built a foundation of trust on communication. That's the conscience, because she shared the same thing with me. And so we got to meet on that level. This is the spirit beyond the fear and the judgment and all the shit. This is us. So my job then is to serve that. Just like in a group, once we hear that conscience, if you're an elected leader of that group, your job is to serve that conscience, not just your ideas. But I get diverted by self-importance. You know, I want to think I'm smarter, I'm better, I'm more important. I'm cool, I'm slick. I know what's going on, you don't. I want to think those types of things, because then I get to feel a little bit better. It covers up the fear that's underneath, that spiritual nature of alcoholism. The third tradition for me, the third tradition really is about tolerance and love. The third tradition states, I'll read the exact tradition because I feel like it. It says the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. The only requirement for me to participate in a relationship is that we be willing to grow and be on a spiritual journey. I learned that from JP. He helped actually teach me about that. That was one of the things that was most important to him. He shared that the only thing that matters is that the people he's around are willing to try to grow. It doesn't matter. We're going to make mistakes. That's part of participation. Guess what? If you're participating in AA, you're going to make mistakes. If you're a leader in Alcoholics Anonymous, you're participating on a high level, guess what? Everybody around you that is suffering from their own shit is going to go, oh, good, now I get to point the finger at you. And it becomes very painful to try to be a member and a leader in Alcoholics Anonymous when you're suffering through that kind of stuff. It can be very, very challenging. It can also be very challenging in a relationship if you haven't been taking care of your side of the street and you make mistakes with a person who's suffering themselves too. You leave yourself open to being a target. But what I love about myself today is I've made all kinds of mistakes through being a human being in Alcoholics Anonymous and participating and doing it in front of everybody. But today I can stand here before you and say that I don't have any problem with who I am. You got questions about me? Let's talk about it. I'm fine to tell you anything about my past. I've been in a relationship in sobriety where I was going to meetings and I was speaking at meetings all around the country, and I'm in this relationship that I didn't want to be in. I was suffering and I didn't know how to communicate and talk about it. I wanted to leave, I wanted to get out, and I didn't know how to say I wanted to leave. And so every time we'd get into a fight, I'd start seeking emotional attachments from other women. I'd send text messages and do stuff I'm not supposed to do. And then I'd wake up the next morning with that feeling of remorse and horror and hopelessness, like, I can't believe I did that again. You know, I've done that in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I've been unfaithful. I've done hurtful things to people. And I don't want to be that man anymore, but you know what? I'm okay. Knowing that in my heart, the person that I am is a loving child of God who's willing to grow and change from my mistakes. And I'm okay with who I am today. With that, Tradition 4 talks about autonomy. And autonomy for me means self-law. It means that I have to leave you responsibility for your own life, right? What happens when I separate from controlling and managing all of your stuff is you become responsible. It says each group should be autonomous except when it affects other groups or AA as a whole. So Alcoholics Anonymous, your little group can do whatever you want. I was giving a talk about that to a group conscience, and this woman said, well, back in my home group in Florida, we read, The Cat in the Hat, and so that's not conference-approved literature. Are you saying it's not AA? And I was just like, well, yeah. And she said, well, we think it is. And I said, well, that's great. Every group has a right to be wrong. And I just moved on with the rest of the talk. You know, I mean, that's fine for you. The reason we use conference-approved literature in Alcoholics Anonymous is that we say we've had multiple group conscience decisions. We have listened to the conscience of the fellowship, and the fellowship says that this is the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. This does have the solution for alcoholics worldwide. Maybe there's a solution for the Cat in the Hat for you, but I don't want to go to a meeting and then all of a sudden trying to get sober and hear the Cat in the Hat. You know, Dr. Seuss is great, but you know, that's not going to do it for me. But with that said, nobody's going to cast them out of AA. You know, it's like every group has the right to be wrong. You have the right to make your own mistakes. For me, in my relationships with my sponsees, that's where I learned the most about autonomy. Because everybody with their first sponsee, it's like, you know, they get loaded, it's definitely my fault. It's because I'm a terrible sponsor, I'm a bad person, and it was because I didn't fix them. Right? We get those attachments. I get attached to their mistakes. You know what? We are all con artists. You have to call me every day if you want to meet with me. If you don't call me every day, we don't meet. I don't show up. Because don't waste my time. You know, I have to do the same thing. I didn't make it up. I call my sponsor every day. He lives an hour outside into the mountains. I have driven up to the mountains, and he was not there because I didn't call him and had to drive home. So I do the same thing with you. We keep the same boundaries. When we're done with all the work, we become great friends. We're one, you know, whatever. It's a great thing. But when we sit down to do Alcoholics Anonymous work, we're just talking about the 12 steps, and we get through this process. Outside of that, when you leave the door, you're going to do whatever the hell you want to do. You are totally responsible for your own life. I'm going to be happy, joyous, and free regardless of what you do. The fifth tradition for me talks about what I can bring. In the 11-step prayer, it says pretty clearly 8 times to see what I can bring. Where there are shadows, may I bring light. Where there is despair, may I bring hope. You know, where there is wrong, or may I bring the spirit of forgiveness. My job is to see what I can bring. I'm not supposed to be here to stand at the door in Alcoholics Anonymous and figure out whether or not you belong here. Because you know what? If you just walked into an AA meeting, there's probably something wrong. and you know what? If you're not supposed to be here, you're not going to stay. My job is not to figure that out for you. My job is to share my experience with you. And when I share my experience, that gives you strength and hope. But the sixth tradition tells me where I get diverted. I get diverted by money, property, and prestige. You know, our primary purpose is to carry the message of love, hope, and service, but I get diverted by sex, security, and society. It's simple. The seventh tradition states that my job is to be fully self-supporting, and I think that Camille covered that perfectly. Emotional and financial independence is important for me. I cannot be attached to the need for you. And that's, you know, when we talk about financial stuff in a relationship, we're not saying that both people have to be equally as financially solvent. What we're saying is my financial security should not depend on you, right? My security has to come from me knowing that I am prudent about my financial business practices. That's where it talks about that. It doesn't say we have a prudent reserve. In the 12th concept, it says, you know, we have prudent financial business practices and an ample reserve. And prudence lives between fear on the one side and recklessness on the other. My job is to think carefully about what I do. And if I'm entering into a partnership, I need to think carefully about what I'm bringing to the table, and I need to be honest with that person and direct. These are the things that are important to me. These are the things that I'm able to bring to the table. This is how we're going to be able to do these things together, right? Otherwise, we get all sorts of those unspoken fear things that grow within our heart, and they become that the grudge that we hold when we come at with people later. The eighth tradition, it's really about 12-step work not being paid for, and my diversion really is that I think I'm owed something for all the time that I give to Alcoholics Anonymous. That's where that spiritual diversion underneath that stuff is. The ninth tradition says that there's no conventional organizational structure. What we're talking about is discipline. We're undisciplined people. We don't deal with discipline well. And so we ask God and a higher power and the experienced members that have gone before us to help us learn about a discipline that will make sense to us. And we apply that to our lives. The 10th tradition is about having no opinions on outside issues. And the reason that we say that is when I bring politics and my opinions about religion and shit like that to my 12-step work, it diverts us. Right? We're not able to function anymore. I had a sponsee that went to church more than he went to meetings. And I watched his face when we sat in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings and people would say, hi, my name's blah, 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 and I'm a recovered Catholic. And a bunch of people would, like, crack up laughing. And he kind of sat there going, you know, I'm not Catholic, but I'm Christian. What do you think about me? You know? So just as important is that none of my guys understand what my God is. They also don't know what my God isn't. Because my fear and judgment doesn't belong in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's not what we're here for. We're here for love and service. The 11th tradition is really about what do I do when nobody else is looking. You know, when we talk about anonymity, we're not talking about you knowing that my name is Andrew McClure and that I work in the substance abuse treatment field. I'm from Denver, Colorado. I have a home group called From 40 Ounces to Freedom. We're not talking about that kind of stuff, you know. We're not talking about you guys not knowing how to find me. We're talking about me not speaking for Alcoholics Anonymous out there so that I can look special and important. You know, we're talking about what are the stuff I do when nobody else is looking. Do I, when I'm driving down the street and I see that woman whose tire is flat, do I pull over and I help her with the tire? And then my first thought is, man, I can't wait to get to my home group and tell them how special I am. Look at how spiritual I am. I helped this lady with a flat tire. And you guys know what I'm talking about, right? Like, I can't wait to tell you guys how spiritual and recovered I am. So that you'll give me that pat on the back. Feed that society part of my human condition. Anonymity tells me that it's much more important what I do, being an example of a spiritual recovered person, whether you see it or not. And the 12th tradition is about sacrifice. What is the time that I give and that I'm willing to give to my relationship? You know, what are the things that are important? Communication over pride is a big thing. I'll leave you with this story. There was this Vietnamese man. He goes off to war, and he has a child while he's gone, this little girl. And the mom's writing letters to the dad the whole time. And, you know, the dad finally comes home from the war, and he meets his three-year-old kid. And, you know, the man's sitting in his child's room. I don't know if I said it was a girl or a boy. We're going to say boy now. In a little boy's room, and the little boy points at the shadow on the wall because the boy's saying, he's saying to the boy, I'm your dad. And he goes, no, that's my dad. He said, that's my dad. I see my dad every night. You know, my mom talks to him every night and she cries. When she stands up, he stands up. When she lies down, he lies down. And immediately the man goes, who is this person? He shuts down. And he goes to the bar, he goes and he drinks. And they have this prayer ceremony, you know, where they get together and it's, you know, he's coming to meet his new son. And so they put a prayer rug down, they light incense. And the incense is supposed to carry these prayers to the ancestors. It's a very important part of their tradition. And he goes and he prays. And this whole time before this, he hasn't been talking to his wife, and so she's been shutting down. She's been shutting down, and she's been getting angry, and she's been treating him differently. And the man is thinking that she's doing that because, you know, she's been up to something while he's been out of town. And she doesn't know why he has been so upset and why he's been cold and he's been spending all of his time drinking. And the two of them, they just aren't talking about it. And so he goes and he does this prayer, and then he picks up the rug and he walks out because he won't let her pray to the ancestors because he doesn't think that she has earned the right because of what she's done. And she goes and she throws herself in the river and she kills herself. And then the next night, while he's talking to his son points at his own shadow on the wall as the candle hits, and he says, look, there's my daddy. My mom talks to him every night, and he realizes that it was the shadow, that the mother had been talking to her own shadow every night because she didn't know how to raise this child without the father, while the father was away at war. But pride kept them from talking to each other on both sides. It wasn't one person's fault. The man wouldn't talk to the woman because pride said, no, this woman has wronged me, and I'm justified in not talking to her. And she's saying, well, but he's not telling me. He's just treating me differently. Something's wrong with him. So she wouldn't say, my partner, I see that you are suffering. Why are you suffering? What can I do to ease your suffering? How can I support your journey? See, I don't know about you guys, man, but I'm so concerned with how you affect me that it's hard for me sometimes when I feel hurt, when my security is threatened, to put myself in your shoes and say, I see that you're suffering. How can I help you? Let me know that I love you. And that's the sacrifice that these traditions say. It's not about how I look. It's not about how important I feel. My job as a recovered person is to look past the fear and the judgment and just love you unconditionally, no matter who you are. And I do love you guys. Thank you for my recovery.
Thank you. Let's give another round of applause for all the speakers, please. All right, the Wacky Paw 15 Host Committee would like to thank all the conference participants and attendees for making this weekend possible and magical. The next panel meeting is in this room. We'll begin at 4:45, and the topic is Do the Steps or Die? Please help me thank our speakers and readers again. We already did that. Let's do it again. All right, and after a moment of silence, we'll close with Courtney will lead us in a prayer of her choice.